everybody to please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have a couple of council members out for personal reasons tonight. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Present.
Ms. Branson Smith?
Present.
Ms. Squeak?
Present.
Ms. Laird? Ms. Wilhelm?
Present.
Mr. Cologne? And Ms. Leon?
Presente. Tonight we have some citations honoring some wonderful service to the city. Ross Tartuzis, Robert Novotnik, Herbert Stoll, and Gregory Moser, who I believe is here tonight. Okay, citation to Gregory Moser. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated, diligent, and talented member of the Bethlehem Department of Public Works and Grounds for 20 years. And whereas Gregory Moser, who started with the city of Bethlehem in 2005 and retired in 2024, has, during the course of his employment, provided the utmost in reliable and outstanding service to the city and the residents of the city of Bethlehem. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that Gregory Moser be extended the gratitude of the City of Bethlehem, which has benefited from his two decades of service and the special contributions he has made to the City of Bethlehem and its residents. Be it further resolved now that Gregory is retired, he can relax and enjoy all that life has to offer him. And be it further resolved that Gregory be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement. Did you want to say anything?
Oh, yeah, I want to say something. I just want to say it's been a privilege to work for the city, and I want to thank the people that hired me with Mary Jo Reed and Dennis Yeo, and I want to thank all my co-workers in my department, and not only the ground maintenance, but every department, because, you know, I was in the sanitation department, so I got around to all the garages and all the buildings and everything. So, and I want to thank my bosses, Chris Sewell and Rich Proctor and Chuck Yanka, and oh yeah, one more person, my director, Mike Alcoff. That's all. And then, thank you very much. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Yes.
Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. All right. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's
a good
thank you. You guys
better be fine.
Coming
out
for 2 minutes.
You deserve a round of applause.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move on with our agenda. We're going to go on to the approval of the minutes for June 18, 2024. Any discussion on the minutes? The minutes stand approved. We're going to move on to public comment on subjects not being voted on this evening with a 5-minute time limit. YouTube reminder, if you start this meeting after 7 p.m., please make sure to scroll ahead so that the YouTube stream is current rather than a recording of an earlier portion of the meeting. If you sign up to speak in person during the first, should I do this out loud? Not being voted on tonight, I will call you up to the podium in the order that you signed up on, and then I will go around the room. All right, first on subjects not being voted on, we have Mary Jo McCool.
Mary Jo McCool, 449 Grandview Boulevard. The past several meetings, residents commented on problematic illegal dirt bikes. Again, I have several comments. First, I do not believe this issue is more prevalent in Allentown than in Bethlehem. Since I live on the border of Allentown and Bethlehem, it is hard to follow riders and report to the police where they end up. I would not know whether to call Allentown or Bethlehem. At the June 4th meeting, a discussion occurred where Councilman Callahan had numerous videos on his phone of illegal dirt bikes and ridiculous noise issues. Chief Cott and Councilman Callahan should meet up to review these videos. I'm also curious about the status of Chief Cott's new ordinance. Is it possible to review complaints to pinpoint areas where high incidents occur and increase patrols in those areas? My second concern is regarding the upcoming 4th of July holiday and fireworks. In past years, Glendale Avenue, which intersects Grandview Boulevard, was ground zero for fireworks. Anyone familiar with this area knows it is a densely populated area and as such does not meet state regulations for their display. Again, I have called to report infractions. If weather warrants it, my AC is on. Several times I would have to close my windows because of the thick smoke, which most assuredly would have set off one of my smoke detectors. Fireworks are problematic for those suffering from PTSD or asthma. My dog goes frantic when he hears them. I must medicate him several hours in advance. I am wondering what Chief Cott's plan is for Thursday. Hopefully with the addition of new officers, more patrols will be out. I understand the response time decreases with this holiday with the numerous complaints. It is difficult to catch every occurrence. I have seen individuals setting them off on the former Bennett Toyota lot. I have had debris in my yard and on my roofs. It is those times when I am grateful that for the slate roof on the main part of my home. The law will not change because of the high tax dollars received by the state. Growing up, fireworks were only legal when overseen by municipalities. Donations in Allentown went to the police athletic league. One further comment regarding the housing issue. As I related earlier, at an earlier meeting, wildlife is being displaced with all this development. Several weeks back, a young bear was videoed running down Main Street in Emmaus. Also, the city's climate action plan calls for street trees. While this seems like an innovative idea or nice touch, consider the havoc that occurred with the storm last Wednesday. I wonder if which entity, the city or utility companies, is responsible for keeping lines clear. In my neighborhood as well as other areas, numerous trees snapped because of the high winds. If the city wants trees to be tree lined, it should work to put utilities underground to reduce outages caused by the storm. Thank you and happy birthday, America.
Thank you, Ms. McColl. Next, I have Bill Shire.
Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. Like a lot of other people, I've been doing some thinking about affordable housing. And I have about five separate ideas, which I won't get through tonight, but you'll hear the remainder in August when I come back from Wisconsin. First Pres, we'll do that first because that's probably the hottest issue right now. I grew up in Bethlehem in a double home, actually a series of double homes, and until my parents finally had enough money to buy one. And I lived in a row house in D.C. for 35 years or so. So when I came back, I decided I wanted to have a little bit of space around me. And so I ended up in a small ranch house on Eaton Avenue. And I only hear my neighbors when they're outside. I don't hear them when they're inside the house. And that for me is a good thing. I mention this because when people do select a home, they're not just buying a building. They're also sometimes, perhaps often, buying some space around the building. And they're reluctant to give it up. So it's understandable why some people out there, and on Center Street and Main Street. Have mixed feelings, shall we say, about a lot of more density. This is not to deny the fact that some of them may feel that they don't want a certain kind of people moving in, but some of them are just concerned about the space. So I have two possible compromises, not complete, but they might help. I don't think I've talked about either one. I know not the first one here, and that is reserving one or two of the four-unit apartment buildings for new police officers. That way, or I just learned from the chief tonight that the number of vacancies on the in the police department has risen from 8 to 10, and it's not looking like it's going to go away anytime soon. And she agrees with me that this would help with recruiting. You know, she says they're advertising up and down the East Coast, not with a lot of results. And if they could advertise that that the new officers would get decent housing at a reasonable rate in a decent neighborhood, that might help. The other idea just came to me recently. We know, by the way, that First Pres is facing financial difficulties. I understand they lost over half their congregation over the various doctrinal issues. Well, not doctrinal, but whether or not women could be ministers and so on. Things like that. I think it was more on gay people. I'm not following that closely, but you know there's been a liberal-conservative split, and they may have lost more than half their congregation. Now, there is a nonprofit going to move its headquarters into that sort of office building that First Pres has, which is unusual for a church, and so that'll provide some financial support. My other idea is let's reserve at least some of the space, if anything gets built, for employees of Kirkland Village and the nonprofit, and if there's any employees at the churches, including Wesley, which is, of course, next door to First Pres. I understand a lot of the work done at those two churches is done by volunteers, but there's got to be some employees. Now, this would be a benefit to everyone, I think. First of all, to people who would only have to walk to work, and I think they would like that. And also the neighborhood would like it too, because these people wouldn't be coming to work in their cars. They would be coming on foot. So it actually might improve the traffic situation from what it is now. So that's my idea. And I took almost 5 minutes for one idea. I'll mention the others very quickly, just titles. Use Northampton Heights. Require landlords to live within a certain distance of their homes. Enforce the Airbnb ordinance. And try to bring neighborhoods together on the question of ADUs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Next, I have Ms. Angela Mitchell.
Good evening, everyone. First of all, my name is Angela Mitchell. I reside at 430 Cherokee Street. And first of all, I just want to thank the city of Bethlehem and the utility companies that got our power back on. You know, 97,000 people was without power. And thank God, most of all, for the breeze, because I don't think we would have survived it if it was really, really humid, but we did. So I thank you all for putting it together that we can have our power back on. I'm here tonight in reference to three subjects. One is housing court. I'm going to keep coming because there got to be a change in the city of Bethlehem. The codes need to be enforced. There's more landlords than ever than before, and they just do whatever they want to do here. So I'm suggesting again, if somebody can help me to find out what can we do to have a housing court here, or mediation court here, alongside of the magistrate. It's taking too long of a time to enforce the laws here. My main concern is the trash. The properties owned by the landlord, the tenants just put the trash out there, furniture out there. It took a whole month for a mattress to be removed. Now, only to find out yesterday another tenant moved. We got garbage all over, furniture and everything out on the street. There needs to be some kind of guideline. You know, if garbage pickup is on Monday or Tuesday, put your garbage out before. If you're moving, the landlord should be responsible. But he does not know. So there needs to be a change, a letter written to the landlords or something pertaining to what are the codes of codes involving being a landlord and renting out property. So I'm really concerned about it, because it's just like, once we get one thing cleaned up, then here we go with another landlord property. So the other thing that I'm concerned about is the street signs. I'm trying to figure out, what is the status? In May, there was supposed to be a surveyor out on Cherokee Street, Delaware Avenue, coming out, according to Basil. I'm trying to find out, what's the status on the stop signs and the stop lights? The accidents are still happening, but they're not being recorded. So I'm concerned about that. Accidents happening still on Dakota Street and Cherokee Street, 4th Street and Cherokee Street, Delaware Avenue and 3rd Street and Cherokee Street. There's still accidents happening, and I'm really, really concerned, because many a times I have seen ambulance coming. I don't know the condition of the people, but something needs to be done with these corners. The other thing that I'm concerned about is the speeding. The cars are speeding up this block, going 50, 60 miles per hour and more. And it's scary sometimes, because it's so loud, it wakes you up out of your sleep. So, you know, we're entitled to peace and quietness in our community. So what can we do? Is the speed bumps still in existence? What can we do to better our community? Because I know it's not only happening on Cherokee Street, it's happening all over. And the other thing is, I'm still concerned about the parking meters. Sometimes I have difficulties working with them, so there's going to be other disabled people that have problems with it. There's nowhere to park anywhere without having to pay parking meters. But then if you're disabled, all you have to do is put a nickel in the meter, and then you can be there wherever you're going for a whole hour. But how do you determine that when you're at the kiosk? So there needs to be more explanations on how to work these things for the seniors and disabled folks. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Ms. Angela. Next, I have Robert Virgilio.
Robert Virgilio, I've been a resident of Bethlehem for 37 years. I'm here again to talk about crime and the statistics that are on the state's crime website, and what accompanies that is their idea of a crime map. So if I could just pass something out to you. That's the page for the website's statistics, and you have to follow these statistics each month to understand the increase, because when you get to the end of the year, it's just a total accumulation, and as you are on this page, you'll notice that in the upper left-hand corner, you can go to the crime map. And the problem with the crime map at the state website is that it's an overlay of every month, so you barely can operate this and get an idea of where in the city the crime is taking place. So if you have a chance and want to get frustrated, go to this website. To pull up the city of Bethlehem, you have to put that code in that window. So in April, I spoke and said that crime was steady and didn't seem to be much of a concern. I waited to June to see if there was a change in that. And I'm not saying that there's a crisis, but I think there are a couple of things that we should pay attention to. And I think the citizens of Bethlehem should have an idea where this crime is happening. I cannot understand why the city can't provide these statistics, since our wonderful newspaper no longer does, unless somebody's shot and dumped into a parking lot at McDonald's. So, if you look at the statistics, it says 2023. That's the total for 2023 under the category of offense count D. 2024 is offense count A. That's my understanding of the statistics. Aggravated assault. Okay, since April, aggravated assault is up 75%. In April, you had 46 aggravated assaults. You now have 68 in June. Simple assaults are up 65%. You had 364, you now have 616. Burglary is up 46%. Larceny and theft is up 60%. Now, 6 month period in comparison to last year, is it anything that's to be overly concerned about? No, we're sort of in line with last year, except if you look at rape is up 55% since April. It's up 76%, it's 70%, 76% of what the rapes were in 2023 at a 6 month period. The same thing for aggravated assaults. We're at 88% of what it was in 2023 at a 6 month period. Now, we have a great police force. And I believe I mentioned back in 2023 when I first came to City Council that we were seeing a lot of officers retire. And I believe the mayor said there was no problem. I heard tonight that there's a problem. So what I'm asking is that the city addresses this so that people can see where the crimes are taking place. If it's near their neighborhood, if it's near their block, there's got to be an easy way to do it and not definitely say where the crime took place. So I just leave that with you to give you some thought. Recently, on my street, Long and Walnut, I'm looking out my window at my bakery loading dock. I see a strange individual. I have no trespassing signs because of the shelter, and the person opened a door that wasn't latched, and I had to have the police come and have them arrested. Now I have to go to the magistrate. I don't know where these people are coming from, but please take a look at that police website and judge for yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Michael. I'm sorry, the spelling is maybe Zap.
Yes, may I defer to my neighbor, please?
May you defer to
may
you?
May I defer to my neighbor?
Oh.
Dennis?
Dennis, yes, you're next on the list. We cannot combine time, so it's still a 5 minute time.
Fine.
Okay.
Please allow me to introduce myself. My name is Dennis Duvanis, and I'm a lifetime resident of Bethlehem. As a boy growing up in the west side of Bethlehem, we used to ride our bikes to every part of the city. My favorite street was always Main Street Extension. Fast forward to the 1980s, and I found myself buying a half-acre parcel on the extension. And in 1984, which was a big year in my life, I got married, and we built a home on the parcel. And we still reside in our home at 1944 Main Street. and the extension remains my favorite street in the city. So I'm there 40 years, using the math they used to teach, 40 years. And there is, however, a huge problem on our formerly idyllic street. There are more cars and trucks than ever, including tractor trailers, which I was told by the police department this week that that would be illegal if tractor trailers were on Main Street. And we can talk about that later, Chief. Despite the speed humps that are there, vehicles are now driving faster, more recklessly, and it's become a terror living there. And as I say, this is the worst I've seen in four decades. Unfortunately, the humps that were so effective years ago when they were installed, and that's roughly 20 years ago, they're no longer the deterrent they once were. And for an idea what they used to be like, if you go from Dewberry to Ilix Mill Road, they have the newer humps, and you can see they're a real deterrent, and people avoid them like the plague. What I want to do is just touch on, in my remaining time, a few things. The area we're talking about is from Taurus Street to Dewberry Avenue, for those of you that are familiar. Taurus, right there was the old Monocacy School, and now that's apartments. Dewberry separates us from the other part of Main Street Extension, and the next road would be Ilix Mill Road. So I just want to hit on a few things here. First of all, the makeup of our neighborhood is much younger than it's been in a long time. When I moved in, I was the young guy in the neighborhood 40 years ago. I'm now the old guy in the neighborhood. And I have a few of the other people from the neighborhood are here, and Kim will be following me to kind of bring you up to speed on that. So I did meet earlier this week with people. I've been meeting with public safety, with streets, with engineering, with the police department as well. And I met with Sergeant Gershner, who's the head of traffic. Am I correct when I say that? And he was very receptive to what I had to say, and he in fact agreed on three of the principles which I laid out. One being, we need to have an increased police presence on Main Street. And he agreed to possibly attempting that by getting the police that are on Ilix Mill Road, when they depart or come to it, use Main Street just to keep an eye on things. There are markings on the road that are no longer visible. They're to be repainted, and I talked with that about that also with the Deputy Director of Public Works, and he agreed to that. The third key part is to raise those humps back to the original level. They've really gone down in the time. Now, I blame the increased traffic on something very interesting, which is GPS and Waze in particular. Because what Waze does is redirects, for those of you who are not familiar, redirects people to the fastest way to get from one place to the other. You get backup at Center and Dewberry every single day in the morning, drive time, dinner drive time, backup. People are looking for Waze, no pun intended. They go down Dewberry, you get to a T on Main, you have to go right or left. They never go right, never. A lot of that has to do with the bumps. You go left, they come through there at high rate of speed, 40, 50 miles an hour, literally. And I'd be happy to sit there. We had a police presence, as I say, years ago. They sat in my driveway and they saw this happening constantly, and it's back. That was pre-bump, okay, if you will. The other things I just wanted to say were, you have this new, and I think this kind of follows up with one of the ladies said earlier, a new type of vehicle, which I refer to as the Fast and Furious clone. And it's these guys now that, primarily guys, there may be a few women, I haven't seen many, who get these Hondas, Toyotas, whatever, Nissans, beef them up, use nitrous. They go through here, they go over the hump, they're airborne. They're literally airborne, because they're at such a high rate of speed, they hit the bump, they're up in the air, they crash down. I hear it in the middle of the night. In addition to their stereos, it's a whole other situation, but it's become intolerable. It really has. And when you hear Kim speak, you'll hear about the number one problem, which is a safety issue, particularly for those children that are now 75-80% of our neighborhood have kids with or have children. I see I'm coming into my last 10 seconds. I just wanted to say that I had great cooperation from everyone I spoke to in City Hall. I was favorably impressed, particularly by the Sergeant of Traffic, Gershner. He was wonderful and really a thoughtful man, I have to say. Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, sir. Next, I have Kim. I'm not going to butcher your last name.
It's Stefani.
Thank you.
Hello. This is my first city council meeting. I'm very excited to be here.
You're going to microphone?
Can't hear. Okay. Hello. Better. Hi. My name is Kim Stavonic. I'm a neighbor of Dennis, who just spoke before. I live at 1830 Main Street. For those of you who know the area, it's the first house where the speed humps begin when you're coming north on Main Street from Moravian. The speed hump sits almost directly in front of my home, and my home sits very close to the road. When we moved in almost 9 years ago, we were one of the first families in the neighborhood with young children again. And within the first couple of years, those speed humps got raised up. They were redone, and cars were flying over that speed hump and bottoming out. Sparks were flying. At first, it was entertaining, and not so much after a while. The city came out after I complained and lowered the speed hump in front of my house, which was great. However, it was only after we were having a lovely afternoon in our swimming pool and I heard a crash, and a car who hit the speed hump so hard ended up in my driveway with their doors open and their airbags hanging out, because of how hard they hit that speed hump. Part of that problem is people come flying down that road and the signs warning people are not far enough before the speed hump. I think when I checked earlier today, the sign is about 5 feet in front of the speed hump and kind of blocked by a tree. So one thing to do would be increasing the signage, putting it much further up the road, maybe even perhaps putting a speed hump before that speed hump and slowing traffic down, because I would guess people are coming in at like 40, hitting their brakes hard or not at all, and flying over that speed hump. Again, my house sits really close to the road and it's a safety issue. I don't feel comfortable letting my children go check the mailbox unless I'm watching from the porch, and even then it's not very safe for my six-year-old. Another incident I'd like to bring up that happened within the last couple months, we had a vehicle coming to deliver some water to our pool, and the truck is large, if anyone knows what a tanker truck looks like, and it was parked in front of my house while I was giving it directions, and a car came flying up behind it, very impatiently tried to pass and knocked my neighbor's mailbox completely over and continued to drive. Again, this sort of speaks to what you were saying about people speeding much too fast, the loud vehicles, and the reckless driving. That road is not equipped, or it wasn't developed for the level of traffic that's currently going through there. It's charming, it's a lovely street, people love to walk on it, I love to walk on it, and yet if I walk my child four or five houses down to their friend, we have to walk single file and I have to constantly look over my shoulder because of the blind turns. I'm sure you're aware of how that road is, that little section there. And some people just don't slow down. It doesn't even matter if you're, you know, signing to them. So it's really more than anything a safety issue, and I'm really surprised there haven't been more incidents. One more thing that happened within the last year was somebody hit the telephone pole directly in front of my house. There were marks in the grass about 3 feet. They moved it. It was tilted towards my home. Definite safety issue. There was debris on my yard from their car, broken taillights. How on earth that happened, I don't know. It didn't really make sense. But again, something I reported, someone came out and looked, but again, just a weird safety or unsafe situation all around. I think more than anything, it's kind of a safety issue with the amount of runners and the people and the increase in the children in the neighborhood. If we must have at least now 5 or 6 families on that short part of Main Street from my home to the bottom of Dewberry, with at least 13 to 15 children, 15 and under. So we would just like to improve that for many reasons. Thank you.
Thank you. Next sign up to speak, I have Harry Favor.
Hello, I just want to address a few things that were said before I get in the main bulk. As the gentleman, he already left, but what's the biggest cause of crime? I think we all know it's poverty and the lack of education. So if you really want to truly address crime, it's not through the inhumane prison industrial system and the locking up and throwing away of people. It's through the building up of community, the education, and addressing the socioeconomic issues that are, you know, keeping people poor, keeping people down. And I think, I don't know personally about like the driving issues, but I do think that a result or perhaps like a cause of why are people speeding all the time now more than ever, and I think it's because we don't have time. Like, we don't have time anymore. I worked two jobs, I had to get rid of one because I didn't have time, I wasn't taking care of myself. You guys know I passed out, shit's crazy. So it's like, we need to have more time to live life. Why are we in a rush to get everywhere? That's because every second of our time is being extracted from those at the top, you know? It's, we live in a very, truly horrible, exploitative system that punishes those who do not have capital. And in the last 10 days, the Supreme Court ruled that the president can commit crimes, that bribery is legal, that agencies have no actual authority, and also that the homeless can be thrown in prison for the crime of not having a home. It is clear that the country is unraveling at its seams. Authoritarian and fascist billionaires are trying and succeeding to remake our society. They want us to live in a world where a handful of plutocratic elites control everything and the rest of us live like serfs. I wish I didn't have to be here and then I could just enjoy my time off with those dears to me, but everything is at stake. The time is now more than ever to be a little revolutionary, you know? We prioritize the luxuries of the few over the necessities and needs of the masses. And again, I'm never going to claim that I know everything, that I have all the answers. I don't. I'm a dummy, but I try. And I think that if we come together, this isn't coming together. This is speaking at one another. And sure, you guys are going to address everything that I said or what the other people said. But I think we need real discussion, real people coming together in our societies like, yeah, we have these issues. And you guys are the decision makers. It's not the people. You guys. And yeah, we delegate the position to you. I don't think that's right anymore. I think it's time for change. I think we need the people to have more power. I think we need more of an establishment of community coming together. I mean, we're a city. We're a city. And people are more isolated now than ever. And I think that's the real root cause of everything. We live in a hyper-individualized society, which really just perpetuates all the wrongdoings, in my opinion. So that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. Next, I have Valerie.
Hello. So I was sorry to miss the last meeting. It was my birthday. I was on vacation, but I'm back. So hello again. But I did ask my friend Harry, hey, did they do anything about the water fountains or say anything? And he said, you know, it might have been mentioned, but there wasn't anything concrete, and there wasn't any action plan or anything like that. So I just kind of wanted to bring back to your attention only 5 or 6 out of 19 water fountains in Bethlehem are currently functional. And basically, from what I've gathered in conversations with other people is that, you know, some of these water fountains that do exist, like, the water tastes like concrete. And I think over the past 2 weeks, we've seen, you know, a case study in situations where it would be nice to have more water fountains, as in a complete heat wave. You know, we're going to start experiencing more and more wet bulb events over the years. Every summer is the coldest summer of the rest of your life. We need to have, at minimum, way less than minimum, really, but we should have functional water fountains. And I'm thinking of, first of all, 2 weeks ago at the peak of the heat wave, I was out volunteering. I was hauling crates of produce outdoors in this heat wave. Naturally, I nearly passed out. And that's not hyperbole. I was really, my vision was starting to go. Thankfully, I had a friend with me who was able to hand me some water and sit with me until I was able to continue what I was doing. But it was just so oppressively hot. I think, you know, everyone here experienced the same temperatures I did. and so we need to have access to water. That's crucial. I think of, you know, so many people have to work outdoors in this heat. I have friends who are manual laborers, crossing guards for school children, not to mention the kids themselves. You know, people who work as stagehands, people working, like even just walking dogs. So many people work outside, and so many people spend so much time outdoors, and they have to. You know, aside from workers, people without homes, they have to stand this heat. They don't have an option not to stand the heat. They can't just go inside and turn on the AC. So I would really like to see some concrete action on fixing the water fountains that we have here in Bethlehem. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I have Artie Caratola.
Hi, I'm Artie Caratola, 813 Loffer Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. On Thursday, I was going to bring some papers here. On Thursday, I had my water tested by a professional company. And I hate to say this to you, but your water you're drinking in Bethlehem is not safe. High in copper and other pollutants. I was going to bring the stats here to show you on what the professional company that I had checked my water, and it's not that good. It caused a lot of problems. So we need to do something about our water. It said it's high in copper and other different things. I mean, yeah, you could be a mad scientist like me. I boil my water for about a half an hour and put it in glass containers afterwards that are, why it's still as hot as could be, to sterilize the container. And then I drink the water, but I don't drink the water that's on the bottom in case for any minerals. But the thing is, does that really help 100%? I mean, yeah, I feel pretty good at the age of 76 drinking polluted water, but we should really check into what's going on there. The other thing I want to talk about is nonprofit organizations, not to mention any names, but some of them are making over $100,000 to $200,000. They're not making, they're taking from the people. And they're claiming that they're a nonprofit organization and we're giving our money to these organizations that are making, are getting more money than higher echelons that are elected officials get. I mean, like, wait a minute. There should be some kind of a margin drawn for how much money you can make if you're with a nonprofit organization. With a nonprofit organization, you're out to help people, right? But apparently, they're helping themselves more than they're helping the people. Maybe we should make a situation to where it's, if the nonprofit organization makes so much, they give so much money to aid the homeless people. Now, we should not have in our vocabulary homeless veterans. That should not be an issue. But anyway, these different organizations that are getting all this money, be a nonprofit, they should donate something to eliminate the people living in tents and having to live out there on the streets and struggling. We should be humane enough to take care of that problem. And also we should put our foot down to not let our tax dollars or any corporation in Bethlehem, at least, to be an example, that will aid any country that will kill other people. We should not, that should not be an issue in the United States, but we need to set an example in Bethlehem and not make that happen. No corporation should be given aid to another country to kill other people. Every life is valuable. The other thing is, when it comes to the wildlife, I suggested many years ago about putting high fences up and bridges for the wildlife to cross. It looked at me like I had two heads, three heads, whatever, you know, like the thing is, the cost of that, yeah, but how many of these little creatures you see on the road dead? You know, we should do something about that too. Those are just a few issues touching base off the top of my head. I hope you all have a good day. God bless. Leaving up to young people, take care of the city. I'm not running for nothing. Take care. God bless.
Thank you, sir. Caratola. Happy late birthday, Valley. I meant to say that. So moving on to people who haven't signed up, does anyone to the left want to speak?
Eddie Rodriguez, Holy Family Apartments. Yeah, I got a lot of stuff done this time around to speak about. First of all, I don't know who's doing the inspection on water heaters at Holy Family, but something was allowed to happen. Why was the water heater in my apartment with an expired inspection from 2011 on to the present day, year 2024? Maybe Mike Elkin can answer that. Or maybe planning, or Mike from inspection. The trees. We've had a lot of damage that's been happening throughout the city, but I find it that I don't think that really the responsibility, even though the responsibility lies on the residents to get rid of curbside trees, branches and logs and so on and so forth. And I can see that some of these residents are bringing it from the back of their yard to the front after the city has picked up. But they could have done a better job, the city, because there's a lot. I don't think that they should be charged, the residents of this city, for curbside trees. Later on, when this problem just goes away and it's little by little is resolved, but we have too many trees in the city and we need our streets cleaned. I'm asking Mike Elko to take care of this because it's just too much. And then some of these residents, they live on Social Security and they don't have the means to pick up on such a high cost of what it would be to get rid of such a great amount of debris and tree limbs and logs in front of their property. Regardless of whether they took it from the back, they labored, and there's something that should be just eliminated and let's get the city clean. I'm sure that there's some funds laying around somewhere to do this type of thing. I'm asking Chief Cott. I want to meet with you, ma'am, because my vehicle, as I shown one or two individuals a couple weeks back, was damaged 7 times at Holy Family. 7 times. And this shouldn't be happening. I'm not there other than living there. I do not get involved with cheap gossip and get involved with brawls and all these sort of disputes that happen over there. And probably that is what brings them on, you know, because I'm one type of person that I deal with myself, and I have responsibility towards myself and towards the city, which I voluntarily do. But I'm asking Chief Cott to thoroughly investigate what those cameras at Holy Family are doing and what they could be doing. Where is the nighttime vision? Did these cameras have nighttime visions? My vehicle was 7 times damaged, but 2 in particular, 1 scratch, no fingerprint. They took out my driver's side rear, smashed it. Nobody heard nothing. Everybody scattered. Nobody heard nothing, not a doggone thing. And it cost me the money. And I was inside my apartment. Right, I'm restless, just trying to look out my window constantly all the time, watching, doing something to prevent something from happening, because these devious individuals, I'm not talking about the manor, I'm talking about Holy Family Apartments. There is a crime that's being committed, and it's allowed because of those cameras not being positioned in the correct position. The status of those cameras are outdated, and they should be changed to the extent that we can see what's happening at nighttime, because the light system in one corner is not functioning properly. And there hasn't hardly been any contact. Allow me just a few more minutes, please, or seconds.
No, with respect, thank you. We can talk after, but that's the 5 minutes.
You just finished allowing somebody else in.
I allowed Robert Virgilio to go 24 seconds over because he was handing out papers.
This is what happens at City Council.
Yes, we follow the rules.
It's not right.
You can stay and talk with me after.
I don't want to talk with you.
Cool. Talk with whoever you want to talk to after.
It's not right, ma'am. It's favoritism.
That is not favoritism. That's the rules. Thank you very much. Anybody else on the left want to talk? No? Anyone in the middle? If you don't mind giving us your name before you speak.
Sure. My name is Jordan Bull. Nothing negative this time. I actually disagree. Like, I think you guys did a good job with cleaning up the trees. Like, I was out there at 7 a.m. the morning after, and like, most of it was already cleaned up. Like, a lot of this has to be taken. You guys can't do anything, but you guys can. Like, you can go out and clean up the trees yourself. Like I was. They can't do stuff just because you want it to happen. Like, it's not all in the city. You're part of the city. We're all part of the city. We all have to make it happen. Not just them, we can let them know what's going on, but it's really on us to make it happen. And by doing that, come here and keep telling them, but actually talk to the people around you. Who's here with you from your community? Who? Because this is a big city. You need to bring your people, all of them, anyone that cares. Not all of them can speak, but they can show up. Thanks, that's it. You guys are doing great. Just keep it up.
Thank you. Does anybody else in the center have anything to say? Mr. Italics? Yeah, Mr. Italics?
Stephen Italics, 737 Ridge. Because of over 100 years of abuse, the South Side can no longer be looked upon for a housing problem solution. The city must now look elsewhere. The problem of affordable housing began roughly on the South Side, approximately around the year 2000. with city council's inability as a check and balance of the city's government, not curtailing conversions of single-family home into student housing. Council, by its inability in reviewing and forcing revisions of zoning code's permissive definitions, allows these conversions. The city of Bethlehem became the only college town in Pennsylvania with a student housing problem. The key to the loss of affordable housing began on Burkle Avenue. These conversions now have resulted in all 47 homes on Burkle being student housing. What's happened? The domino effect. Fifth Street, Carlton, Montclair Avenues, Summit, Fillmore, Morton, Webster, Hillside Avenue, and Polk are almost essentially 100% student housing. Hypothetically, what if all the students lived on campus dwellings? Count the number of residents on these streets, which could be affordable housing, because they once were. And by negligence of the city in making it easy for developers to come in and buy up properties, and city council inability to have them revise definitions, how can five unrelated students be called a family? Defies logic, but that's exists in Bethlehem, and the city is still, in definitions, created a student housing section, promoting its continuance and not revising definitions. So that means a student house cannot be converted back to a single family home. The city continues shooting itself in the foot, and council is doing nothing about it. So, the city created its own problem. Allied by the negligence of council. So affordable housing now is a big, big issue. I want to commend the young people for speaking here, because they're the foundation of a democratic system. And the comments made by a gentleman this evening were profoundly accurate. And I was quite impressed. And I noticed some faces of people involved with the city frowning during his comments, which to me is a sign of old age. But I strongly urge these people to come forth at these meetings and express what they might wish to say, even if it may off topic or off the wall, but at least they're speaking.
Mr. Antonix, thank you.
Very good.
Double thank you. Anybody else in the center have anything they want to say? Off to my right. All right. Then we're going to move on to topics being voted on. I only have one person signed up, and that's Harry Faber.
Lou again. I think one of my first city council meetings I asked about this, about the destruction of records. I'm just curious as to, like, the process and the necessity as to why it needs to be done. Because I noticed that the records were from 2016. That's not even 10 years ago. And I know a lot of it had to do with finances, I think taxes. I even saw golf on there, which I think is interesting. Honestly, you can get rid of the golf stuff. I don't care about that. But it's, realistically, why are we getting, like, is it, like, a big storage issue? I just want to know, and understand why. Because, again, I'm ignorant. I don't know everything. So I would just like to know as to why we need to get rid of these records. Why is it so important to do so? That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Faber. Anybody else on the left have anything to speak on being voted on tonight? Anyone in the center? Anyone off to my right? Oh, Stephen, it's you there. Mr. Antelis.
Still Stephen Antelis. The fact that council is voting on two COAs that will authorize a sale of a service, authorize the sale of service revolvers to retired officers implies that these weapons were originally purchased by the city and issued to the officers in performance of their duty. The issuance of weapons to officers implies that is in the interest of welfare of the community. To offer the weapon for sale to the retired officer also implies its continued possession by the retired officer will maintain this welfare assist, making the city safer. Why would anyone object to this procedure? What is bothersome to me is for an elected official to object to the sale, to me, raises a serious question of judgment. I would expect that we, the voters, elect those who exhibit the best judgment when it involves the welfare of the community.
Thank you, Mr. Antelis. Anyone else in the center want to say anything about what we're voting on tonight? Anyone to the right? Awesome. Moving on to old business. I don't have anything under old business, so moving on to new business before I open it up to the other members of council, I did want to say that we are currently working on dates for a public safety meeting to talk about the dirt bikes and Chief Cott's her ordinance. So we will be having dates coming once the public safety committee has a chance to iron that out. So anyone on council under new business, anything?
Yes, I just wanted to ask for an update, I guess, on the water fountain situation where we're at as far as repairing some. I guess that would be Mr. Apkoff.
As was indicated the last time we spoke about the subject, obviously we've been looking at the water fountains. I've indicated the ones that are disrepair have fell into disrepair over a long period of time. And they have significant issues, significant costs in terms of restoration. But we're certainly considering doing so. But we're trying to do it as smart as possible. We're first just evaluating the usage. I agree. I mean, certainly if there's demand for them, if they're going to be utilized, that hasn't been case in the past, which is partly why they've been sort of allowed to get to this, this stage.
Do you have any idea, like a ballpark figure of what it will cost for repair, like high end, low end, medium? For
probably the minimum at each location is several thousand, $5,000, $10,000
per family.
If any of them have leaky underground lines, lot of them have that. Some are completely destroyed. But like I said, I mean, the reason that they have been sort of left unaddressed and is because over time there were two major problems. One, they were not utilized frequently, and they were at the same time they were constantly being vandalized.
Okay.
So I think it's two issues that are really difficult to overcome, and there isn't any obvious answers on how to deal with that. So I don't think it would be wise to fix them. They were fixed repeatedly in the past, and then have the same issues recur. There's no indication that that wouldn't happen.
Are there any that we know in the inventory that may not cost an extensive amount of money to repair? Are there any that are?
We honestly, since this came up again, any that could easily be put back in service would be a huge deal. We've done that.
You've done that. Okay, great.
What was that?
I just want to add on to that. So if you have another topic, I don't want to take away from your time. Was that all you have for the water?
Yeah, that's all for the water. I do have two other questions.
Can we elaborate on the water a little bit? Because I know we had an internal conversation regarding this a little bit, and because of that, I thought that there was some movement on water fountains in Friendship Park, and with that grant, you guys were looking at water fountains. Am I correct in that? The water.
Yeah,
in the park.
There is one planned as part of the renovations that we had. We did put one at Fairview, which we're also monitoring the use of that one again for the same purpose at the state.
And as far as it being a systemic issue, I think council members, you had voted on the acceptance of the DCNR grant that we're doing on the park study. So then one of the things that I think can be included in that park study as we look at all of our parks, because as you know, we've kind of, we have Fairview Park, we have Friendship Park, there's a couple that we're in the process of looking at in South Bethlehem. As far as a systemic issue, as far as what the cost is concerned or things like that, as far as the plans going forward, obviously every time we build a new one or we have the opportunity to build a new one, like we did with Fairview, like we're doing with Friendship, then it's gonna be included. But I think it's gonna be a topic that can be addressed or at least brought up during that kind of park study with that DCNR grant that we got. As far as like that issue systemically throughout the city.
Thank you. Was that good?
Go ahead. Oh, okay. I think it's, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think as far as a question of records destruction, we're looking at only get rid of the paper, hard copies, but we have the records electronically. Am I correct? Okay. So they are available, it's just getting rid of the paper copies. All right. And the only other final question, Mr. Bosco, I was just, regarding the issue of the water, how often do we test the water?
Hundreds, if not thousands of times every year.
Okay, and the last time we tested it was fine?
Well,
the
City of Bethlehem Water has met all state and federal guidelines for water quality consistently.
Okay, I thought so. Thank you.
That's it. Anybody else? Mr.
Yeah, I have a few things. I wanted to make a comment about the water too. I know that I took a tour years ago, and I know that our water system is tested regularly. And Mr. Pascola, if I'm wrong, correct me. Doesn't the city like annually win the state awards for like the best municipal water? If I'm wrong. Call it the AWOP award or something like that.
Yeah,
AWOP stands for Area Wide Optimization Program. It's an award given to treatment plants for their consistent efforts at producing quality water over the full year. So we've gotten that award, I think, about 14 consecutive years. Right. And we got it last year too, right? Yes. So, and you know, the other thing, just to back up, you know, the water department. My wife had died of cancer 17 years ago, and when she was fighting it, she was really up to date on alkaline, on water being too high of an alkaline level or a city level. And she went out, and you know, she wanted to order 5 gallons of water, you know, from a water distribution company. And I kept telling her, I said, you're wasting your money.
you want to do it, go ahead. But you waste your money. So Bethel Moore's got the best water, you know, around. And she kept them buying it. And one day she took out a piece of city, these strips, and we did a tag. I still have it on one of my computers, actually. And I said, I'm going to show you know, you're wrong. And she lined up her one brand of water, another brand of water, Deer Park, another one, you know, all the different brands you can buy in the stores. And she's testing them with these acidity strips. And then I put them right out of faucet. Bethlehem's water had the lowest acidity level. And I said, she's an Italian. She literally was livid and had to write a letter to every single one of these water companies. And that's a true story. And I haven't sent, maybe someday I'll dig it up on my computer files and I'll send it to you. But I think the water department's doing excellent. And I know we're, you know, testing all the time. So if you're testing, I'd be very interested to see that testing, you know, from that independent company, because I find it hard to, yeah. So anyway, thank you. Anyways, Chief Kai, you got a minute? So, anytime I'm talking about the police department, I have utmost respect for the job you're doing. I think you're doing an awesome job, and so is our police department. But I think what's happening right now is that we have 8 or 10 now. We're down 8 or 10 police department, our police officers.
Yes, sir.
So, and the guys are all doing a good job. I think you've been doing a really good job also. I think it's probably the lack of replacing. I think we just had 2 more officers that are retiring now too, right? So is that taking us up to 10 or is that to 12?
So that's going to take us to 10. We have a retirement pending on this Friday. However, we did recently hire 3 new police officers that are going to be going to the police academy this upcoming Monday. So that puts us at 10.
My concern is we had in the newspaper, and I'm just quick, I didn't hear anything but from the city officially, but we had 2 new shootings last month. It just seems like it's becoming more consistent. And I know in one of the cases there was some mental health issues with that. There's no way that's the fault of the city police department. And again, I think you guys are doing an awesome job. But I think we need to look at, as a council and administration, hiring not only replacing the 10 that were short, but possibly adding more police officers above and beyond the 10 that were already down. Because I brought up, you know, a couple meetings ago about the noise on Main Street, and I looked into some ordinance. New Hope has an ordinance, but they also have 2 police officers that sit on their main drag there. And I'm going to get a copy of the ordinance that they have. They have an anti-revving ordinance or something like that, where you can't physically rev motorcycle engines or car engines and have loud. And I don't know what's in the ordinance, and I am looking at that, and I'll bring it to council in, you know, next, you know, few months. But I think the lady that was here earlier talking about the amount of traffic on a Main Street extension. I live on Main Street also, but I live in a very urban setting. And I have no problems living there. And, you know, the noise just comes with where I live, which is no big deal, because I enjoy the fact that I can walk around to all the places that I want to go to. But I do think we do have a problem with, as you were saying, and I would like to be a part of that and have that discussion about the off-road bikes that, you know, that are on. It is a problem, that the off-road bikes revving up the engines. And I think what we need, if we can, I don't know if we can have one officer during dinner hours, maybe from like 5 o'clock to maybe 8, 9 o'clock, that do we still have the foot patrol officers? I know we did the last time I was on council. We went back to like a community policing thing under Mayor Donchez, where there was, I think, 1 or 2 police officers. I know we have the bicycle team or patrol still. But do we still have the police officers that were walking the beat?
We have the officers on foot as well as bicycle, yes.
We do. So let's assume someone comes flying through here with
music blasting, or they're revving their engine. I'm not talking just like, you know, they're like purposely trying to gain attention. And I think it's terrible that it's ruining the whole vibrancy of the downtown corridor of Restaurant Rose between Main and Broad Street. And I'm not the only one who says, I mean, I have neighbors, there's people that come down all the time. I've talked to a lot of business owners. I walk Main Street all the time. I talk to all the business owners. And there's constant complaints about it. So when we start having the discussion about the off-road vehicles, and hopefully by then I can have a copy of the ordinance from New Hope. We can all sit down and try to come up with something to do. I don't know if you have any ideas on how to patrol or police cars that are blasting music with their windows down. And I'm not just talking about just music coming out of their window. I'm talking about like blasting it. It's an echo effect. It's almost like a canyon in there with all the buildings. You know, it bounces off, and it's very. It's not a good thing for the community, I think, especially for the dining situation for our businesses on the Main Street, you know, in Broad Street area. So
I agree, and we've done directed enforcement on Main Street and Broad Street before, as well as areas over on the south side, and we were able to successfully do that with our traffic unit, with the motorcycle officers being able to catch up to some of the individuals that were revving their engines, playing their music loudly, and quite frankly speeding and driving recklessly through those areas. And we're going to continue to do those targeted enforcements.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it. And again, it's no reflection on you, the job you're doing, or the police department. I just think that if we had additional officers on duty, we could maybe have one there from what I would consider like the most opportune time for our businesses. And I'd say that's probably Saturdays, Sundays, lunch hours and dinner hours that, downtown. I think it's safe to say we have a high amount of restaurants in our business district and north side. And I think it's it hurts their business when there's the amount of noise and coming from the cars as far as music and the revving of the engines. And the other issue too is the mufflers that are modified mufflers. And I don't know, there's got to be a state law on that or something as far
as. There is, yes.
Yeah, so, but how do we police that? And I think that's the hard part of it, right?
It's difficult because we'd have to see it and hear it and cite them for it. I always explain to everyone, we can't be everywhere at every time, but when we are, we try our best to enforce those violations.
Right. Well, I'd be happy to have a discussion as far as if there's a way to have at least one officer, or one bike officer, or one patrol officer down there. I mean, if the walk-in patrol officer, I'm not sure he's going to be able to catch up to a motorcycle or a car, but I just think there's got to be a way to police it. So, and I'd be happy to have a discussion with you.
We just talked about that more during that public safety meeting
Thank you, Jean. Last thing, can you get me or can you get us the information that the one gentleman came, as far as like the number of shootings since the beginning of the year?
I knew we
had two, but and where it was. I mean, the data that he had quoted seemed off to me.
It is off. I will provide context to that. And Mr. Virgilio is no longer here, but we have been working with the city solicitor's office on a public media release that would go out daily from the police department that would provide information to the community as to where crimes are occurring without giving out that pertinent demographic information that we want to maintain as confidential as not to put people's personal business out there.
Yeah, if you just get us a list from 2023 versus 2020, the first 6 months of 2024, as far as I'm not talking like taking tactics, I'm talking like gun shootings as major assaults, because I thought that number was off a little bit that he was giving us. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Can I ask something to that for you?
I think the mayor wants to say something.
Do you want to say something?
I was just going to talk a little bit about the recruiting situation as far as the police department is concerned. Is our problem right now is the same problem that every police department's getting, is we can't get enough people to take the test. And we essentially are hiring all of the qualified candidates. So for example, like let's say we have 8 or 9 openings and we have a bunch of people take the test. The good candidates are on our list, on Allentown's list, on Easton's list, and everything else. And the fact that there's been an explosion, I would say, as you've seen growth in the suburbs and other places, there are more law enforcement jobs. And across the country, including across here, we've had fewer and fewer people take the test. So right now the problem is we have 7 or 8 openings, and in a perfect world, we're like, we're going to hire 8 people. Like only 4 get through the background that we're able to hire, don't take jobs in other places and things like that. So we've done a lot as far as working on recruiting internally within the police department about where we're going, how we're talking to people. It really is a national estate issue. The lieutenant governor was in here a couple of months ago and we were talking about this, which is the reason why we had gotten some of the signing bonuses that had helped with some of our officers. But our challenge is getting up to that number. And I mean, we are doing better in the fire department, but it's essentially the same situation where we only have so many candidates that are on our list. The advantage of the police department is that we're able to send 2 people. And one of the things we're going to talk about in the next month or so is how we've been able to come up with some progress now as far as the fire department is concerned too. But our issue is not even just how many positions we have staffed. A much, much, much bigger issue is how do we get qualified candidates to take the test. And that's something that we're having a lot of conversations about between our HR department, between the police department, between other law enforcement agencies in the Lehigh Valley, because everybody's dealing with the same issue. And it's just something I wanted to let you know is like we're spending a lot of time thinking how do we increase our pool of candidates? How do we get more people? And I'm just making up things a little bit here. Do we waive this fee? Do we go out a little bit earlier? Do we go here? Do we go there? Do we call the people? Do we host reception? You know what I'm saying? Like different things to try to increase how many people. But that's the challenge that we're facing. And that's the reason why when you see those vacancies and things like that, it's not as if there's people out there that have passed the test that are on the list that are like, hey, I was qualified, I did everything I could, and I didn't get hired by the city of Bethlehem. We've hired everybody that has been able to pass all of the requirements and offered them jobs, and they didn't take jobs in other places. But we talked about this with Allentown Easton. If 50 people take the test, and you've probably heard the numbers, and these are just estimates, but like 10 years ago, you might get 500 people to take the test, or 400 people, or 350. Now you get like 70. And once you work through background checks, once you work through physicals, once you work through, that number goes from like 70 down to like 22 or 23. And then you got all these police departments are after the same 22, 23, 24, which goes back to a bigger conversation about just people's, it's a more difficult job than it used to be. It's kind of like teaching, like people that went into it for one reason, it's a different job than it used to be. So we're having all those conversations, but it is at the forefront of us right now thinking about how do we, because council budgets the money. Council budgets the money for us to have, I guess, what, it's 150 officers?
154.
154 officers in there, but we're not getting above 145, 146, generally, because as soon as we hire 4, 5, 6, you get another couple to retire.
Right.
The difference 10, 15 years ago was if you had 6 retiring, you were able to hire 6 because that many more people wanted to be police officers. So one of the things we've tried to do too, and the chief has done a great job, is, this isn't like a competition, but we're winning a lot of those competition battles with other police departments that people want to come to work for the city of Bethlehem, where the problem would be even worse. But we're thinking about like, how do you design a police department in a way that young people want to be a part of? And the good news is we're getting very high quality recruits and we're getting the best. And I think Chief Cott and I have been to how many graduations in the last couple of years where all of the trainers, instructors are like, look, you're getting 5 or 6 high quality officers. And I'm also being honest, it's like you look around at some of the other people that are hiring, it's like, we're happy we got these 6. And like those 5 people are being over there.
Right.
So that's just to kind of get down to the practical, what's the solution to that? It's a broad systemic thing that we're working on with state and federal government as well to think about how can we get more people to take the test.
And I know the other thing too, like the Bethlehem Scourge Gang, you know, that you taught in Allentown. Allentown's pay schedule was higher than Bethlehem Scourge Gang, so was Easton's. So Bethlehem was losing teachers right out of college. So maybe it's something where we have to look at our starting pay, bumping our starting pay for to getting officers. Because if I get out of the police academy and I'm getting offered a job from Allentown, Easton, and Bethlehem, generally you're looking at your finances. You know,
and Montefiore's and benefits, you know, a variety of things.
I would say, too, just like with school districts, it looks like where do you want to be and what type of police officer do you want to be? And I don't pretend to understand everything about the identity of police officers, as I'm not one. But, you know, some teachers are looking to work at Liberty or Freedom. Some right. teachers are like, I want to go work in Parkland.
Right.
And you get the same thing with police officers. And one of the things that I've been particularly proud of is the last maybe 20, 25, 30 officers that we've hired the last 3-4 years really, really come on board. And Chief, I don't want to speak for you. This is just something that you've shared with me with your professional services division, are people that understand what policing should be. And so we are winning those, but I think those are always conversations that we're having. And we've been talking to the police union about this too, and having ongoing conversations with the HR department about what we can necessarily do to be able to attract even more people. But it is really like just the, as you know, it's like you see the same thing about people don't want to be teachers anymore. Like we're just seeing less and less people that are taking the test. And that's a real challenge.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mayor, we had an email from Ms. Conley about the steel stack lights. I don't know that all the ins and outs of what's going on over there, but between the steel stack lights and the tree lights on Main Street, I think it's really important. I mean, we're the Christmas city year round, not just during Christmas time. And I was down at Stone Harbor last week, Stone Harbor, Avalon, everywhere I go, like all these high-end areas. And I think Bethlehem, I consider, I'm sure you do too, Bethlehem as being a high-end. I think we're the number one tourist attraction in, you know, Northeast Pennsylvania. I think it's really important that we get those Christmas tree lights on. I know there was a few people, I mean, everybody talked in that, all the business owners, all the people that the lights were on for years. You know, under Mayor Donchess.
You're talking about steel stacks?
No. I'm talking about the tree lights right now.
Okay.
So they're out. And it's dark, and it just adds to the atmosphere, the vibrancy. And every time I'm out, it's all I hear about. You know, they don't talk about the garbage that much because it's, you know, Main Street area is very clean. You know, it's just about why aren't the lights on this year? Why aren't the lights on? And I've said I brought it up. And, you know, there hasn't been any change. So I would just ask that, I don't know who needs to do it, whether it's you or whether it's someone in one of your departments, go to the people that, I mean, what we had brought up before with Mayor Donchess, they got put on, everybody loved it. And now they're out. So we got those lights out, we got steel stacks out. I would hope that there's at least a phone call made to the Wind Creek people. Explain it to them that when they took over, they also talked and promised to be a better neighbor, be more neighborly. I just think, I know the cost from what I'm hearing is high. Something's got to be done. I think before Music Fest, those lights have to be put on. I think it's imperative.
So, and I would say, obviously, like you had referenced, it is Wind Creek's responsibility. They own it. And I think, as Ms. Collins had said, you know, obviously, I would start by saying it's like, of course we want them to be on. I mean, I think everybody agrees that, you know, steel stacks with the lights on are an important thing. You are correct in saying that, like, it is not cheap. And I didn't have a chance to read Ms. Collins' email, but I mean, the numbers that have been thrown around are anywhere from several $100,000 up to one even just general estimate of $1 million to be able to do it. It is obviously something that we have passed along to Wind Creek, that we've talked to Wind Creek about, that we've had conversations with them about, that is important. ArtsQuest is also engaged in the conversation because obviously it's really, really important for them to have them on. So I would say it's obviously a high priority for us to be able to talk to them about how do we encourage those lights to be back on, because, you know, I agree, it completely changes just the whole scene down there. And
have you had any discussions with anybody there?
Yes, and they have said that they're looking at different options, and they're considering what the best options are, and we are trying to help them with pushing along this as being a priority. We obviously wish yesterday they had paid for them. But I can tell you that is something that we have set as a priority for the city of Bethlehem.
Wasn't it in their contract when they took over from Sands that they assured in the contract that they were going to be responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of the lights?
It is their responsibility as far as what's in like a contract and getting into an area, and you know I don't like to speak about things I don't have high levels of confidence in, so it's certainly something that we can research and probably get back to you on or send you something after I talk to Mr. Spurk and Ms. Collins and do some research on that. But a lot of what has been agreed to over the years with the casino is very regulated by the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board as far as a lot of things having to do with their casino license. But as far as like the development and things like that are concerned, it is their responsibility, but it's not anything there that can be tied to like their gaming license, if that makes any sense. So we have obviously been frustrated as well that not only, and I mean, Wind Creek only took over a couple years ago. Obviously it's a beautiful hotel, that's a good start, but we want to see them have more concrete plans as far as the redevelopment of the rest of the site is concerned. And we've offered our, and we continue to offer our assistance and continue our conversations. We were extraordinarily frustrated, I think most people were, that the Sands got the license in 2006, and then largely there was not much redevelopment done beyond, and SteelStacks doesn't really count because it was Arts Quest and PBS and the city, but that's been a frustration for I think a lot of people going back to, you know, when your brother's mayor, that, you know, they weren't more aggressive about it. So I would hesitate to use the word contract as much as something that was their responsibility, but just I'm being completely honest with you, I think we're on the same page as far as what we want them to do. I think it would be a good one for Mr. Spurk and Ms. Collins to kind of take a look and research and be able to send council more information, just because I don't want to say anything and speak with confidence about what's the difference between a responsibility and a contract.
I would just hope that, very short conversation with someone about it, and they assured me no, it was not. But I know that the renewal license is up, and there was an issue with it. So I don't know if it was a documented issue or something like a small issue. So I just hope that this isn't retribution or some type of from Wind Creek side.
I didn't know of any issues. I mean, the hearing for their license renewal had gotten rescheduled. But I don't believe that there was, I don't know of any issue that there was. And I can tell you that whatever, like, the cost is the driver. It's not, I don't think there's any type of retribution or anything. Nobody's like, I'm not going to turn the lights on or I'm not going to fix this. Like, you know, it's just, it's the cost. And also, what's the long-term solution here? It's kind of a unique thing. Like, you just don't have a lot of people that do that. So, but like I said, it is a priority for us as well.
Thank you.
Yep.
I won't. First of all, Ms. Crampsey-Smith asked basically all the questions I had, so thank you for that. So that was all covered. I really just wanted to say thank you very much to the Department of Public Works, Streets, especially everybody who's been working overtime round the clock since Wednesday. I think that the job you've done has really been tremendous. Glad to see that the yard waste facility is back open. Understand there was a pole and wires and everything down. Obviously, PPL has really done quite an outstanding job also, but I just really wanted to thank the crew in Public Works in particular for their hard work on that. And that's all I have.
Yes, I was also going to thank Public Works, but I'll move on from that. The last thing on my list, while you're up, Chief Cott, I know that you spoke publicly recently about the city's zero tolerance policy regarding fireworks, and just for those in the room and at home who didn't have a chance to hear you speak on that, would you mind just saying a little bit more about that?
No, absolutely not. I had planned on mentioning it during the mayor's report. We are going to have a zero tolerance policy for fireworks in the city this year. It's not that we haven't in the past. It's incredibly difficult. Our hands are tied with the law change that occurred in 2017, making bottle rockets, Romy candles, and the like, consumer fireworks, legal to possess. So you can legally walk down Main Street with a bottle rocket, with a Roman candle, and we cannot arrest you for it unless we physically see you lighting it off, or you're shooting the projectile at another person, you're intoxicated in public, lighting it off from a motor vehicle, or you're within 150 feet of a occupied or unoccupied structure, which in the city of Bethlehem, that leaves you very, very little places to legally be able to do it. So we are going to have a zero tolerance policy. We will have a full cadre of officers out and about on the 4th of July, as well as the rest of this week, because I do realize that it's not just on the 4th that these these nuisances are occurring.
Thank you. And I actually will just take 10 seconds to articulate my thanks to Public Works and Water and Sewer, and just commend the job that they did. I know Mr. Alcott, we spoke, communicated about it briefly, but you know, having been out and about the day after the storm and seeing in my sort of goings about the city, seeing the crews out until late in the day and then up and at it again at 6:30 in the morning the next day. So I wanted to join my colleagues and those here who spoke their thanks. So we're very fortunate to have such a hardworking and dedicated team. Really appreciate all the efforts. Thank you.
Okay, and before we move on, I was just back to Councilman Callahan's point. When you send that data over, if it's possible, if you can separate it between like random crime and crime that's like more of a domestic nature, because I know that you hear like this amount of crime is happening, but having sat through that award ceremony, that was really an amazing ceremony. It seems that so much of our crime is so very targeted and not random. So if you can kind of break that down, if it doesn't add too much, I know you got your hands full, but when you send that over, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Like I said, context is everything, and I'll make sure that that's provided to help clarify some of the data.
Thank you. I also think Public Works rocks. Your prime, like taking care of those primary and secondary routes is great. And to the comment made earlier by one of our community members, we do have to come together as a community to make sure we're doing our fair share too. I also wanted to remind people about CTAC, which is Community Traffic Advisory
Council.
Yes, Community Traffic Advisory Council. If you have issues with traffic, we have CTAC, and it's a great way to come and let your concerns be known to people who have expertise in the field and aren't constrained by council's rules when about having a discussion. You can have the discussion at CTAC, whereas here we can't really get involved in a back and forth. We kind of have a light agenda, so I was hoping that Mr. Spurk, if you don't mind talking to us a little bit about records, since we have community members that want to know about it. Just simple things like, you know, obviously we're keeping an electronic record, which is great, but are there documents that we have to keep forever? How do we make sure that if there's something that a community member needs to know, we haven't gotten rid of it?
Yeah, sure. There's a state law that in very great detail specifies what records and for how long must be kept. So we comply with that, and every time you see something for records destruction, you'll see that it's been reviewed by the solicitor's office to make sure we comply with the state law. Obviously, just because it says you can destroy them doesn't mean you have to. So we're very selective about that. Most of it's digitalized, but we certainly do keep a lot. And if you've ever been to my office and seen paralegal's desk,
and I'm assuming that we don't, like, as we're getting rid of hard copies, I'm assuming it's not like on a 3-inch floppy that becomes obsolete, that we can no longer, like we transfer records over and keep up with that.
Yes, I learned today when I was in the DCED department, they have a ramp that's permanently attached to their stairs just to facilitate removing things as they go through their digitalization process.
No medical emergency. We're good. Awesome. If you don't mind.
So yeah, it's a time-consuming process to digitalize, but it's very much ongoing.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much. Okay. I guess we could move along in our agenda. Moving on to communications. Communications exec.
The June 17th, 2024 memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution. An agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda. Resolution 60.
The June 17, 2024 memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution, an agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of the Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. 6C.
The June 19th, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Boscola recommends a contract with Great Western Services Incorporated to provide materials and labor to restore water and sewer utility trenches at various locations within the city of Bethlehem. Cost of the contract is $184,644. Let me repeat that, $184,644. There are no renewals. Two bids were received, and Great Western was the lowest responsible and qualified bidder.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda, Communication 16.
The June 26, 2024 memorandum from Director of Community and Economic Development, Laura Collins, with an attached resolution. The memorandum requests authorizing the administration to submit the city's 2024 CDBG and Home Annual Action Plan documents to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Public hearings were held to discuss a draft of this plan.
Resolution 10D is on the agenda, Communication 60.
A June 26, 2024 memorandum with a proposed resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development, proposing four substantial amendments involving prior program action plans for the Community Development Block Grant and Home Investment Partnerships Program. The proposed amendments were the subject of a public hearing held by Council on June 18th. Ms. Collins recommends that these amendments be approved by Council and submit to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for final approval.
Resolution 10E is on the agenda, Communication 6F.
A June 26, 2024 memorandum from City Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached proposed resolution and associated settlement agreement. The proposed agreement would confirm and resolve existing usage of and access to portions of City and Redevelopment Authority properties for parking and vehicle access purposes in a location that experienced frequent transfers of ownership of multiple parcels during the urban renewal era of the mid-20th century.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda, Communication 6G.
A June 26, 2024 memorandum from Assistant City Solicitor Matthew J. Deschler with an attached fee agreement and resolution. Attorney Deschler recommends a fee agreement retaining the law firm of Kessler Topaz Meltzer and Check LLP to represent the city as trustee of the Bethlehem Pension Fund in a class action lawsuit seeking damages against GoodRx Holdings Incorporated for losses incurred in the city's pension fund.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda, Communication 6H.
The June 18th, 2024 memorandum with proposed resolution from Sophia Vidarilis, Director of Financial Services, requesting the destruction of records from her department. Ms. Vidarilis has received the reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act, and the records listed on the exhibit accompanying the memo fall within the categories where destruction is permitted.
A resolution will be placed on the July 16th City Council agenda. Moving on to reports, President Colon had nothing to report, neither do I. Mr. Mayor, do you have anything to report?
I was going to have the chief talk about the fireworks, but the other thing is just to add to, you know, Mr. Alcall and his whole department, that it's really a difficult thing what they had to entail, because obviously you have a lot of citizens where you have trees falling in the street versus trees falling on private property, working with everybody, getting people to understand that you can't sometimes remove a tree if the power lines are down. That's obviously the problem we had over at the compost center. And it was a situation too where obviously people are doing other responsibilities right now. They're paving streets, they're doing things, so to be able to mobilize them and coordinate them is an incredible amount of work. And I think that we did as well as we possibly could to be able to remove. And like, branches aren't snow, which often just melts. Like, you have to do something with them. You have to physically move them. Something that they did an incredible job on. And there's still work to be done. Like, we're still getting down to some of the areas around the trails and things like that. Some, you know, side streets, different areas that we're kind of cleaning up. But it was an impressive thing. I will say, and my other people may have comment too, is like, we're having more and more of these storms. Somebody in my neighborhood the other day called it the new snow. Like, we just don't get some of those snowstorms like we used to, and yet we're getting these very powerful storms that are just knocking down trees. And it is something that I think, just as far as a city is concerned, we're going to have to continue to have, you know, conversations about some of those things as they relate to that. So I do just want to thank Mr. Alcohol for his incredible work there, but also like the people that obviously we're never going to be able to thank because they're not here, because they're working middle shift or they're working third shift, their ability and our guys with SEIU to be able to move some of those schedules, as Mr. Alcohol said, like keeping people to stay late and things like that. Like all of that is, it's very time consuming, it's a challenge, but I think we did that very well. And the last thing I would just say is that, you know, I think that we have talked a lot and we're going to continue to talk about like where you can enforce where you can. But the challenge is whether or not it's main, whether or not it's downtown Main Street or Main Street Extension. Like we are one of those people, by the way, that are like have the kids in the neighborhood. So like that's, I have walked that all the time. Like there are certain things that the city is making incredible progress on, but like driving behavior and like the culture around driving is one that some people are getting it and some people are not. And I go back to something that I think it was Jordan that had said is like, the reason why things feel different in Bethlehem is because we have so many people that, as I say all the time, like care about doing the right thing and caring about creating a culture by which some things are allowed and some things aren't allowed. It's really one of the things that we look at, obviously, is how can we short-term enforce it, but long-term, when we're talking about walkability, bikeability, but just, it's really on all of us, I think, and everybody in this room does that. And that's one of the common things that brings us to this room, whether or not we're here to care or run for office or work for the city. But that kind of like positive like culture, like it's on all of us to do what we can to minimize some of these things, to where we're able to, like it's really central, I think, to the mission. And it is as important about setting that culture that like it's not gonna be okay. Because we can't follow everybody around. We can't follow everybody that's loud. We have to be able to think about how do we design streets. But also, it's like when you go to other places, and sometimes we talked about, you know, I think Mr. Gowing talked about the beach. Like, you go to some places, and it just feels different, where, like, people aren't going to behave that way as far as driving, because there's less people doing it. And you build an infrastructure around it that it's harder to speed. It's harder to do those things. People look at you differently. And I think that we've made a lot of progress there, and we're going to continue to make progress. But I just wanted to make the point, because I thought that Jordan said it well, is this idea that it really is on all of us to build this positive culture, which will, I do believe, reduce even further some of these problems that we deal with that are better than other cities, but we still have a long way to go. And I think we see it the most in Bethlehem with driving culture, is that, like, you know, there's just people that are angry and frustrated and they don't care and there's no respect for walkers or bikers or people who follow rules. I mean, since we had the baby and I walk like 50 times as much as I used to with him, it's like, you just see it now in a way that I didn't necessarily see it before when I was driving the majority of the time. I think you all know that I talk about how we've made a lot of progress in areas like that. Driving culture is one that the city has a long way to go on, and I think that falls on all of us. And, you know, we will continue to do that. But a lot of these problems that we're talking about, I think that's the common theme, that there's more that we can do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Moving on to the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee will meet on Tuesday, July 16, 2024, at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. Several budget adjustments will be on the agenda. Grace Cramsey Smith, Chairwoman of Finance Committee.
Thank you. Well, we have no ordinances for final passage, and we have no new ordinances, so moving on to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of the city-issued handgun assigned to Lieutenant John Buskirk, a retired city police officer. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion?
Yeah, I just want to agree with what Mr. Natalik said. Handguns. By ordinance, I don't know if ordinance or law or whatever, but our police officers have to shoot these guns so many times. So in the course of their career, there's thousands and thousands of rounds on these handguns. So they're severely used. So we either approve to sell it as a gift, or not a gift, but a memento to the officer, which it is. It's his handgun. It's something that he has used or she's used since they got out of the department. We either sell to them at a reasonable market rate price for that amount of used of a handgun, or we don't, and it's going to get sold onto the market, and it's going to be on the street. So to me, this is a no-brainer. I think every time a police officer retires, if they choose the option of purchasing
their handgun. I think it's the safest route, and I think it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I should have said earlier. I just want to say thank you to all the retirees, including the police officers, for their service, and I wish them a very healthy and enjoyable retirement.
I just want to express gratitude for living in a democracy where all of our opinions get to be voiced and heard. So the clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leung?
Aye. Passes 4-1. All right, resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of the city-issued handgun assigned to Sergeant Jeffrey Liddy, a retired city police officer. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Quiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leung?
Aye. Passes 4-1. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Great Western Services Incorporated to provide labor and materials to restore water and sewer utility trenches at various Bethlehem locations. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Quiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leung?
Aye. Passes 5-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the City's program year 2024 CDBG Home Action Plan for January 1st, 2024 to December 31st, 2024 is hereby approved for submission to HUD by the mayor along with required assurances and certifications. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Quiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leung?
Aye. Resolution 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that 4 substantial amendments to prior program CDBG/home action plans are hereby approved for submission to HUD by the mayor. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Quiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leung?
Aye. Passes 5-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the mayor and the controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a 3-party settlement agreement and such other agreements and documents as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor and or related to the 3-party agreement between the City of Bethlehem, Redevelopment Authority of the City of Bethlehem, and Christmas City Hotel LLC, doing business as Hotel Bethlehem. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Quiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion?
I had just one question about this, and I appreciated the time that Mr. Spurk took to walk me through this a little bit. I'll just share that I did call to ask some questions earlier. They're not paid, the pages aren't numbered, but under the parking area settlement section, which is section 4, subsection B, item II. The easement shall be released from any and all covenants governing the historic district that the easement area may be subject to. Can you just clarify for us what that means, please? Yes.
Back in the mid-60s and the 70s, as urban renewal was going on in the city, the Redevelopment Authority, with a lot of federal money and state money, bought up a lot of these parcels around the hotel. And as we talked about with the Walnut Street Garage, they took neighborhoods down and did other things by buying the parcel. Those funds came, in some instances, with conditions that specified what use these things could be, these properties could be put to going forward. And so now that these properties are not being sold, but being usable by the hotel to continue their parking, wouldn't want to violate any provisions that may have been in those 1960 funding agreements that came from the state and federal government. So to the extent there is something like that in those agreements that we need to get released so that there's no problem with this transaction, the parties have agreed to work together to make sure that we can get those releases.
Okay, because to the non-lawyer, when I read it, it to me read more that if there was something that, say, would be threatening to the integrity of the historic district that was proposed to, that is released, that covenant is released, that's kind of what I was thinking it said. Can you reassure me that that's not what it said?
Yeah, it's more like possible 1960s strings attached to the money that came back then to help eliminate the automobile junkyard that used to be there and build what's there now.
Why is the historic district specifically mentioned?
Because they called it the Urban Renewal Historic District of Monocacy something or other, Colonial Quarter. It's a 1960s name.
So it's not specifically about the designation of the historic district?
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, no, to change that, you'd have to go to the State Museum Commission, you'd have to pass an ordinance. No,
right.
It's just a 19, I can't think of something about Monocacy Area, Urban Renewal, Historic District or something, was the name that was present then, which I've become very familiar with, because all of these parcels that kept moving around from the hotel to the RDA and back and some to the city, resulted in this situation where the parcel that the city owns that contains the Smithy also creeps up the hill and takes some of these parking spaces. The parcel that the Redevelopment Authority owns in front of the Smithy also extends up the hill and takes those other parking spaces. So those 11 parking spaces turned out to be owned by the city and the Redevelopment Authority. Now, when the hotel was a few years ago, they came forward with their expansion plans to build an extension out in the back and a bigger parking area and things like that. And they needed from the Redevelopment Authority, who owns the land back there, access to get to Old York Road. And so it was decided, well, let's just do a survey of all these ownerships and properties, and that's when this situation came up. Leftover. There was even in the archives from the Redevelopment Authority an agenda item from 1965 talking about leasing the land to the hotel so they could use the parking. I don't know if any lease ever happened or if it did, where it is. So that's what this does. It just cleans that up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other discussion? I just want to show my appreciation for cleaning all this up. This was a discussion that I had when I came on council, so seeing some resolution here is much appreciated. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Resolution 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a fee agreement with Kessler Topaz to represent the city in a class action lawsuit against GoodRx Holdings Incorporated. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion.
Attorney Spurk, I was just wondering, can you just give us like a Cliff Notes version of what this is and the amount of money that we lost? If you have some.
That I don't know. The pension board on its own retained this firm some years ago to just keep an eye on those investments and see if there were ever any losses that occurred attributable to some SEC violations. And so this is the law firm now that has come forward to the pension board and has identified an area where there could be some recovery. And the pension board voted to allow them to go with the litigation. But the law firm took a close look and said, actually, we think the city is actually trustee of the funds rather than the pension board, so we need the city to sign on. But
I couldn't hear, I'm sorry. So we will, it's a class action lawsuit, and we won't really know what the amount is or any kind of financial figures until.
Probably the pension board would, but they were the ones looking at it. And as I said, it's been a couple of years now since this firm obtained by the pension board at no cost, just to monitor these things to see if an opportunity presented itself, and they thought it did, and they thought that our pension board was in a sufficient position to be what they call lead counsel, or lead party, lead plaintiff in litigation.
Okay, thank you. And just a quick question, I know the answer to this, but I just think for the purposes of the folks here, this is one of those situations where the firm would only be paid if there was a judgment and they would take a certain percentage of it. So
that's
it's
correct.
Not money, funds coming out of city or the pension board's coffers to pursue this action.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. Resolution passes 5-0, so it is 10-F. I think I said that. I will accept a motion and a second to consider resolutions 10-H through 10-J as a group.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Wilhelm, Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Okay. Discussion
was the one that was
second. It was Mr. Callahan or me. Sorry. Or your option.
Discussion on the motion? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. The motion passes 5-0. If you want to read the resolutions.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, are hereby granted for 128 Brink Street to replace existing asphalt roof sheathing with GAF slate line asphalt shingles and to paint all previously painted surfaces, including stucco, masonry, facade, window trim, and eaves. For 130 Brink Street to replace the existing slate roof sheathing with GAF slate line asphalt shingles and to paint all previously painted surfaces, including stucco, masonry, window trim, and eaves. And for 311 East 3rd Street to install a new large window, a new large wall sign and other new signage for a newly constructed mixed-use structure. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Wilhelm.
Discussion on any other resolutions? The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Ms. Leon?
Aye. I just
want
to wish my partner a happy birthday and thank all the family that supports us all up here as we kind of have to step away from family to do our duty. Have a safe night, everyone. Thank you.